WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Manaz Afkami was forced out of Iran 15 years ago because of her women's rights work. She lives in exile in the United States, where she now directs the Sisterhood is Global Institute and serves on the Advisory Committee on Women for Human Rights Watch. Her new book, Women in Exile, is about other women who, like herself, have been forced out of their countries. I asked why she wanted to write about other women in exile.
The experience of exile for me was such a traumatic experience, and I spent so much of my initial weeks and months in this country thinking about it and trying to cope with it and trying to somehow come to terms with it, that I came to see that unless I was able to take my self-absorption, shall we say, in this regard, outside and try to learn from others, from other people's experiences, I was not going to be able to cope with this condition and try to learn to adjust to it and to lead a positive life. So it was mostly really a learning experience initially. I sort of drifted into it in some ways, in the sense that I came across women who have had the same experience, who shared the same experience, and through talking to them, I began thinking there was so much that we shared, so much that was similar in our experiences.
Did you find that there were things the women you interviewed had in common, no matter what culture they were from?
Absolutely, yes. It seemed astonishing that no matter whether the woman was from Cambodia or China or Afghanistan, so much was similar in the way they were brought up. For one thing, the idea of a society or a community trying to, in some ways, limit and control a woman's area or space. And in a sense, you know, talking to the women from these 12 different countries, I came to realize that women are perhaps in exile even in their own homelands, in the sense that they're in exile from the political arena, they're in exile from the social arena, from the public sphere, from certain economic endeavors. And in that sense, they somehow learn to use the coping mechanisms that they have used at home when they come abroad.
I'm interested in the events that sent you into exile. Before you were in exile, you had been in the cabinet in Iran as the Minister of State for Women's Affairs.
Yes.
What happened that sent you into exile?
Well, actually, the situation in Iran was changing rapidly the last few months that I was in the country, and the fundamentalist revolutionaries were becoming more and more strengthened in their activities and in their political demonstrations and opposition to the regime. I, at that time, however, was involved in setting up or helping to set up an international center for the advancement of women, which was a UN institution. And I came to the United States in order to finalize that agreement. The UN, being a little slower than it usually is expected, the process took longer. And in the few weeks that I was spending here, it became apparent that I couldn't go back. And so something that was supposed to be a short business trip ended up to be a long 15-year life in exile.
When you were in New York on business with the United Nations, you got a phone call from your husband telling you not to come back to Iran. What had changed in Iran?
The revolution had actually accelerated. The fundamentalist forces had gained strength. And the regime who was in control then, or marginally in control, was in fact somehow scapegoating some of the elements who were objects of the fundamentalist opposition. The women, of course, were at the top of that list, and activist women such as myself were very much targeted. So the government, in fact, was trying to give in on these areas as quickly as possible, so that perhaps to try to stop the tide of the revolution. That's why a few months even prior to all this, I had lost the position of Minister of State for Women's Affairs. So I was told that if I went to Iran, I would be arrested by the government at that time, which was a military government, in fact. And, of course, subsequently, as it happened in the case of many of my colleagues, when the fundamentalists came to power, the first group who would be persecuted and in some cases executed would be the ones who were already taken by the previous regime and put in jail.
Now, I believe the Iranian government charged you with corruption. This is the revolutionary government.
Yes.
Charged you with corruption on earth and warring with God. What does that mean?
That is the standard charge against whoever is deemed to be not within the confines of what the fundamentalists believe to be the right way to live or behave.
When you were in New York and you got that phone call from your husband saying you can't come back to Iran, and all of a sudden you were in exile, you were never going to go home again.
Yes.
What went through your mind? Did you change? Did you think, now I'm a different person than the person I was a minute ago?
Yes, I think that that's the most immediate and the most shocking aspect of being forced into exile. That is that a whole set of things, a whole number of phenomena which define one's identity are suddenly taken away. The whole context of one's being is shattered. You have to start all over again, redefining, reshaping not only your external life, but the self who's at the center of all that. Who am I now that I am not the person that I was? So I think that this is the essence of the exile experience, is this question of how to deal with one's identity. And I think every one of the stories in the book also define that. That is the point to that as the central experience of exile. And both the loss and the reconstruction are I think, the central theme of living in exile.
My guest is Manaz Afkami, author of the new book, Women in Exile. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Manaz Afkami. She's an Iranian feminist living in exile in the United States. What were some of the issues you organized around in Iran when you were active in the women's movement there?
Well, you know, a group of us who were working with the originally with the University Women's Association and then with the Women's Organization of Iran, we tried to see from the women themselves what it was that they wanted to deal with. And it seemed more and more apparent that the main issue that women wanted to deal with was economic self-sufficiency, that they considered that the root of their problems and also the root of their solution, in the sense that if they were self-sufficient, they could begin to seek other rights, and if they were not, all other rights would be sort of utopian and abstract. So that's actually, we began with stressing that, what would lead to economic self-sufficiency, that is literacy and training vocational training and the kind of education which would lead to this particular end.
Now, you've criticized the international women's movement and the left in general for not being quick enough to condemn Islamic fundamentalism in Iran.
Yes. Yes, and I think I have that problem even now, you see. It's not that I'm criticizing the movement in general, but there are trends that are trying to be, in the best sense of the word, sensitized to diversity and sensitized to difference, which I admire a lot, and I myself am very much appreciative of. But to take the kind of thing which has meaning in this society especially, you see, where we have different ethnic minorities with their rights and their needs for self-assertion, to take this out of context and try to apply it to other societies societies who do not have the protections, legal and judicial and constitutional protections of civil rights which exist in this country, I think it's misguided that a sort of wish for diversity is wonderful if everyone can express oneself within a context. But you see, when you take that and support the right of certain groups to assertion, the difficulty becomes then that takes the right from all other groups for self-assertion.
Well, you know, the debate in the United States, for instance, among feminists has been, is it cultural imperialism to accuse another culture of subjugating women? Or are we projecting our Western values onto their culture?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I have problems with. You see, it's every culture has problems with the role of women. Through the years, in every culture, there has been a system of interaction between genders which has been subjugating one's gender and having different roles for the sexes, to the detriment of one sex. Every country has experienced that. Every culture is trying to deal with that as times change, as societies change. These practices evolve and change, and there is a dynamic nature to them. To think that in some cultures this is the way they are because that's their culture, if they have four wives or if they beat their wives or if they mutilate their little girls, this is simply their culture and they are doomed to have it forever, I think is a sort of a reverse colonialism. There's one set of values for us and another set of values for others. And I think that is not helpful to anybody. Of course, the opposite of it is not that one must take Western values and Western priorities and try to implement them in other countries. The idea is to fully appreciate diversity and fully appreciate differences of expression socially and in every other way. But there are basic rights that each human being can strive to have, and how they strategize it depends on the culture. But every culture is dynamic and should change. In this country, 30 years ago, blacks and whites had to eat in separate places. The culture had to change.
There is now a fatwa, a death warrant, on the life of Taslina Nasrin, who is a woman from Bangladesh, who's a writer and a doctor, and she's living in exile now. Islamic fundamentalists have attacked her for her writing. She's a feminist. Some of her writing is very sexual. What is your group, the Sisterhood is Global Institute, doing on her behalf?
We're working on behalf of women's human rights and their rights to express themselves. Of course, in the case of Taslima, is the same thing. That is an expansion of the same ideas and efforts to make sure that people can say what they have to say and the price is not put on their heads. The expounding of the ideas that there should be variety of expression in society and people should have a right to say that and that people should not be accused without recourse.
Are you working with her personally?
No, actually, we're not. You know, she's her life is in danger, and she is in hiding, and I don't think it's safe to be communicating too much with her. We have worked with groups who tried to get her out of the country, and we are, I think, trying to do as much as possible in terms of saying what her rights are as a person, to say what she has to say without being, without having a price on her head.
There's a recent Canadian law that offers guidelines for gender-based persecution.
Yes.
Would you explain what that law is?
That law, as a matter of fact, my organization, the Sisterhood is Global Institute, was active also in promoting that and in getting information for the Canadian immigration on that. And we're also following the same in the United States. The idea is that in certain countries, simply being a woman can be dangerous to your health in the sense that you don't need to do any particular thing. You don't have to be politically active against the system, the various usual grounds for asylum. Simply being a woman is and acting as an person can be dangerous. And so if you seek asylum simply on the grounds that in such a country as, let's say, Saudi Arabia, being a woman is dangerous, then your case should be considered. Now, by being a woman, I mean being a woman and not agreeing to subjugate yourself to the particular limitations that are set upon you.
Manaz Afkami is the author of Women in Exile, published by University Press of Virginia. She directs the Sisterhood is Global Institute in Bethesda, Maryland. This is Fresh Air.